Take my toxic assets, please.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon, and for Steve Chiotakis, this is the day the Obama administration is supposed to spell out its much-anticipated toxic purge plan. Given the details that have leaked out so far, we know this will be a public-private partnership that relies on private investors to put up some money, with the government offering some guarantees to sweeten the deal. And why would investors take the risk on something they've been avoiding up to now? One administration official says, because we need them to. And they're kind of doing us a favor. Now, will this plan live up to investor expectations? Seems Asian markets are already sold on what they've heard so far. Overseas markets soared today, which is saying something considering their pessimistic outlook lately. Marketplace's Scott Tong joins us from Shanghai. Scott, what's changed over there?
Well, I spoke to a trader in Singapore, and they're talking about Tim Geithner and his plan. And the currency trader in Singapore said two things about the Geithner plan. Number one, it's finally here. And number two, it appears to be credible. And that's all markets need to look for a little bit of hope on a day like this. But we have to remember how hard markets around the world, including Asia, have fallen. Let's take Japan. Back in September, its main index was up to 12,000. And today, with all this joy, it was returning to 8,000. So if there was any hooray, it was kind of a whisper, Bob.
Okay, hooray. So what do Asian markets have to do with U.S. banks?
Well, if we learned anything from this financial crisis, it's that the world is still very, very global. Korea got hit very hard, still trying to get off the floor. Japan as well. The other point is that many of these banks are all interconnected. They're either under the same umbrella or they lent to one another, and they're all trying to excise the same cancer, these toxic assets.
Well, China may be the most important in all of this. Any additional signs of optimism there?
There was a rumor today that the leadership in Beijing may add more money to the stimulus package here in China, so a little bit of optimism there. But the point is, China is still a small economy if you compare it to the U.S. economy. It's one-fourth the size of the U.S. economy, and the per capita number is one-tenth of that in the U.S. So, sure, China matters, but the U.S. matters a whole lot more, and that's what Asian traders think about.
Marketplace's Scott Tong in Shanghai. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob.
The mood isn't just sunnier in Asia today. As we mentioned, Tokyo's Nikkei gained 3.5%, setting a six-week high. And stocks in Hong Kong jumped nearly 5%. European exchanges are up around 1.5% at this hour. The top industrial governments, the G20, will be meeting in London next week. But is there a better way to keep watch over the global economy? A United Nations advisory panel of international economists is suggesting replacing the group of 20 nations with a UN body for dealing with global financial policy. Christopher Wirth reports from London.
The plan put forward by a UN advisory panel headed by Columbia University economist Joseph Stiglitz proposes a new global economic council. Stiglitz told the Financial Times that the global response to the economic crisis should be more representative than the current G20. He placed the new council's size at roughly 20 to 25 members. The plan also calls for replacing many of the functions that the International Monetary Fund handles. The panel would like to see developed countries devote at least 1% of their fiscal stimulus packages for assistance to developing countries, and it supports the creation of a global reserve for helping those nations during a crisis, but without many of the restrictions on government spending that the IMF places on the countries that receive its funds. It's uncertain how seriously the proposal for replacing the G20 will be taken. The plan will go before the UN's General Assembly this week. Members of the G20 themselves will have the opportunity to review the plan on April 2nd. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping its members navigate troubled economic times. Thrivent.com/new offers. And by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 423 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce emissions. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Michelle Obama turned the first shovel for a vegetable garden on the south lawn of the White House last week. According to the National Gardening Association, 7 million American households plan to start their own vegetable gardens this year. That's a 19% increase from 2008, and not surprisingly, more than half those people say they're doing it to save money. But what if you don't have a green thumb? Well, a few companies have popped up recently that help people use their outdoor space to grow food and nothing but. Andrew Seltzer has more from San Francisco.
In the backyard of an old Victorian house, Sarah Wyman empties a bag of soil and pours it onto a clearing of dirt. She picks up a shovel and demonstrates something called double digging.
This is just to make sure that the roots are encouraged to grow straight down instead of compete horizontally so that you can grow things a lot closer together.
It's part of a day-long organic gardening crash course by Wyman's company, All Edibles. They design and build your garden and teach you how to take care of it. First-time gardeners Paul Silverman and Laura Shapiro are doing a new low-budget package developed by All Edibles. The entire garden gets built in one day, and the clients have to help do the work.
But we wanted to do that anyway. We wanted to be a part of the entire process.
And even though that sweat equity helps save money, they're still planting the garden in phases.
This is the first third of the yard, and then somewhat later, then we can do an installment with another portion, and that'll help keep it manageable on a cash flow basis.
This one-day build costs $1,400. Not cheap, but the garden planted today should produce enough vegetables and herbs to feed a small family for the entire year. Even with the poor economy, All Edibles co-founder Kirk Saunders says business for his four-year-old company is good.
You know, gas prices go up, food transportation costs go up. If you're growing it yourself, you don't really have that problem.
By 3 o'clock, the backyard has 15 different crops planted, ranging from blueberries to broccoli. There's a drip irrigation system so that Shapiro and Silverman won't have to water the 150-square-foot garden by hand.
But look, we can harvest our dinner. And not just salad.
We can harvest four people's dinners, I think.
I hope so. I hope we have that kind of productivity out here.
A few other edible landscaping companies have recently sprung up around the country. The National Gardening Association says during the 1970s oil crisis, vegetable gardens were more common than at any time since. Those tough but fertile economic times may be upon us again. In San Francisco, I'm Andrew Stelzer for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. Check out our podcasts at marketplace.org. And thanks for making us a part of your morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.